All right, hello, how are you? This is Your Politics, RTE's weekly politics on all that's happening in Leinster House. I'm Áine Lawler, Paul Cunningham, Juliette Gash and Micheál Lehane are all with me. And they're back. They're back, Micheál.
Yeah, they're back, and they're haunted by their words from the general election campaign, because they're back in earnest now, and the kind of the rows have been swept aside, and it is that big promise and prediction of 40,000 houses or thereabouts being delivered last year that is really causing political difficulty for the government now. Did they mislead the public on it? Well, if they didn't, the opposition contend it was an incompetent move. So either way, there's no winning that one. And I suppose the biggest problem at the moment, there is going to be a review of the Housing for All plan at some point. But right now you do have a government with a new mandate and no new ideas so far. And all the while, the number of houses that are going to be required just goes up and up.
I mean, it is a worth statistic that it was around 30,000 homes that were completed in 2024. And that new Davy stockbroker stats saying that we need to have 93,000 every year for 6 years. So, I mean, the job is massive. Poor James Brown, the new minister, is down there in the Customs House, Gandon building. And boy, has he got a job to do.
Says you.
Yeah. And I know he says they're going to build, but this is the problem, isn't it? We've had targets, we've had promises, we've had plans, we've had every which thing. What we have is an increasing gap between all of that and actual delivery on the ground. And again, if you look at what the experts are saying, they're saying not alone is it going to be hard to meet targets this year, even going to be hard next year as well. So that gap and that delivery unit that Micheál Martin was talking about in his office, that's going to come under a lot of focus, I'd have thought.
I think so. A lot of strain. I mean, I was just listening in the Dáil Chamber there, their statements on the programme for government, and both there's unanimity on government and opposition sides. We need to do more, and housing is a crisis and it's an emergency. And yet, I don't think that viewers looking in could have too much hope that we're going to be knocking out 50,000 by next year, let alone 93,000.
There's going to have to be some sort of big idea, because there hasn't been one, there hasn't been a hint of one. You know, they're still relying on Housing for All. Like they said, they're going to examine every option. But there has to be some big idea, because they haven't delivered what they said they would. And that they're not going to be let forget that.
Yeah, one other thing, there was a rumour around Leinster House that when Micheál Martin, the Taoiseach, had referenced Deutsche Bank as one of the people who had said 40,000, around 40,000, and that Deutsche Bank is now saying
that
was...
And just to clarify on that as well, so that was one, I think there was maybe one
Cairn
other.
Cairn Homes was another one.
But all the other experts, all the other political
ESRI,
parties...
Central
of one
bank,
voice, were CSO. Saying, no way, yeah. Jose. Yeah. So back to the in good faith.
So Micheál Martin had referenced Deutsche Bank, but I'm now hearing what I'm going to confirm, that Deutsche Bank was quoting information which they'd secured from the housing minister. So it wasn't an individual analysis that they had.
And it is a kind of serious political charge, isn't it? That, you know, the opposition are basically saying, you knew what you were saying was bull. You'd very good reason to know that it was bull, and you still kept putting this figure in front of the Irish people. On the other hand, that's the basis on which they got re-elected.
Well, is it? Or was there more to it than that? I mean, there were other alternative housing policies there. They took a punt on it, basically, because they wanted it to be that. That's never sufficient. And then I suppose there were the previous years where things were underestimated by the central bank and just hoped for the best, really. But there's no way out of that. And the big idea, Micheál Martin alluding to it yesterday, talking about a significant intervention from the private sector, saying that things are out of kilter at the moment, that it is the state who are the biggest player in the market and that has to change. But how that actually manifests itself, we don't know yet.
Well, I mean, one to watch is that planning bill, because a big decision for the housing minister is enacting that bill, and we know that there's several legal challenges going to jump out pretty quickly on that. So that was the piece of legislation we took a year to get through the House, massive, hundreds and hundreds of pages. But that was supposed to deliver a faster planning process, which would deliver faster homes, but that could get caught in the courts.
And again, we've seen, you know, it'll again, what will change? Will the new legislation, if it's enacted, change all of this? We've seen huge developments, for instance, in Dundrum, in Clonliffe, in St Anne's being turned down. And we've seen a lot of local objections, and people were entitled to object, backed by local politicians from a range of parties. So it's hard to figure out where the push-pull is there,
isn't it? I
think
it probably comes back to what Juliette says, is we need a big bang. The minister, we spoke about this in the podcast last week, James Brown, you know, young, smart guy, but to a certain extent, policy has already been decided for him. So it is the housing plan that was, you know, still there last time. Now it's due to be reviewed. So the question is, what change can come and how can they unlock it?
But you're back to the point, Juliette, that people did vote for a continuation of the grant schemes that are there. Yeah. And Micheál Martin pointing out to Sinn Féin and the others, there were alternative proposals put forward. They didn't win the majority support.
Exactly. But exactly as the point that Micheál made, where people voting for parties based on their housing policy or not. You know, Callaghan had it succinctly put when he said to the government, he was like, do you only not trust the CSO when it's an election year, you know, and not trust their figures? Is it fair to say that people didn't vote for Sinn Féin in as big numbers because they didn't like their housing policy? We don't know. I think it was brave of Sinn Féin to put forward something new and a big departure from what had been seen before. Obviously, the government is not going to be choosing going down that route, but they do need to be bold and different.
They're very defensive for someone who has got a mandate and have a lot of numbers and a lot of security. That's kind of interesting, and you wouldn't expect that. And in particular, Micheál Martin referencing discussions with the Social Democrats yesterday.
Yeah, that was quite sharp, that exchange, wasn't it?
Very sharp, very school teacherish, and completely at odds with what the Social Democrats will tell you.
Tell
about
us what
those
happened.
Well, Micheál Martin said that he thought their presentation was very poor at those meetings, that they were looking at the clock and wants to get out and get a piece on the 6 o'clock news. The Social Democrats have long said that their discussions with Micheál Martin in particular and with Fianna Fáil were almost confined to discussions with him. The very few other people in the room spoke, and that there wasn't the grasp of detail comparable to what Simon Harris and Pascal Dunne in particular.
Comparable.
Yeah. Okay, there was no comparison between them. So that's interesting. And it's a really defensive tactic by Micheál Martin.
And suggests that Fianna Fáil is still a bit sore that the centre-left wasn't more keen to talk government.
But if you speak to some people in the Labour Party, they felt in their discussions, which were led by Micheál Martin, Dara O'Brien was also there, Jack Chambers was also there. But Labour sources said they felt pretty quickly that they weren't feeling the love, that this was a fairly shortish conversation. Mm-hmm. And the same attitude was there, which was that the schoolmaster was talking down to the pupils and not very impressed with their homework.
But apparently the schoolmaster was making mistakes and things about their policy.
Yeah.
The mind was already made up.
Exactly.
But it was a curious thing to say, and it was a curious line of attack.
Simon Harris did the same thing during leaders' questions today, where he was like, you know, he was being asked about the figures, and there's no defence in getting those figures wrong. They got them wrong, they repeated them up until the very end, and then they were like, they were wrong, but they're still attacking back. So his first answer this morning to David Cullinan was, well, your policy didn't win you enough votes. You lost 5.5% percentage points. And it just, I think there needs to be some ownership of this. They got it wrong. And whether the electorate can say they were sold a pup or not, the government will say that they were hoping the figures were going to emerge, but they didn't.
The opposition were also saying government got it wrong on preparations for Storm Éowyn. There was quite a lot said about that this week.
Absolutely. And there were really sort of individual stories that I suppose you kind of, they're so important to hear, is what I'm trying to say. You know, 12,000 people still without power, almost a fortnight out, but the individual stories of you know, intergenerational house shares, that's one thing. But then Rose Conway Walsh had this story about a constituent of hers in Mayo whose father was on a ventilator and had a sleep apnea machine, and that lost power, his bed, which had obviously hoists, etc., that lost power as soon as he was brought to the doctor. He lost his life, and they were attributing that as being, you know, associated with the storm. And for a family to have to go through that is absolutely horrendous. We're hearing all sorts of stories of, again, people with young children, whatever about not being able to entertain them, sick children, people not being able to make 999 calls, as Mairead Farrell mentioned. And Ivana Bacik's point about people being waked by candlelight. You know, people living for 2 weeks in, you know, the Stone Ages, essentially, and being really felt left behind and ignored.
And I mean, it did happen. It was politically, it was the week of all that row about speaking rights and the formation of the government in the end. So was the eye off the ball a bit? Because that, again, is what the opposition were claiming. Isn't that right? That more should have been done in advance. Generators should have been put in place in advance. Why did the pumps go down in the water stations? Why did the emergency backup system that's supposed to work all the time for emergency calls, why was that temporarily not available? These are serious questions.
And that curious thing where there isn't an actual emergency plan for a storm, there are for floods and other things like that, does seem extraordinary, especially given the changing weather patterns, that this was very much on the horizon. There seemed to be a lot of anger about the Irish water situation and the fact that there weren't backup generators there. So, it there was poor planning. Was it to do with the fact that you were in between governments and all that? It probably would have happened anyway, I think, given that all sides now were saying there has to be a much stronger plan put in place. But that's very easy to say, isn't it? I mean, there's still a lot of fallout from this storm, even when the power goes back on. Financially, it's going to have to be worked out, particularly in the area of insurance. People covered up to a certain amount, but the damage far more extensive than that.
And there is the humanitarian assistance scheme, and the message from government has been, you know, come forward, apply again if you have broadband, if you're able to make the application. And, you know, you will be listened to. But it is means test. So there are calls for something between that and those covered by insurance, where the insurance company agrees to pay up.
And it's difficult. I remember in 2002 when my house was flooded. And first of all, it was just that idea of the drains had come into the house. So first of all, it was that your home, and then suddenly it's destroyed. And then very quickly you have to get into the insurance process, which is prolonged. There's a negotiation over it. It is very, very stressful. And while there are a multiple number of places you can go for assistance, when you're in the middle of it, you can't even see further than your front door, because you're just trying to get things. So I have some understanding of what those people are like. And it is pretty clear that the government recognises there's a job of work to do. But as Micheál alluded to, we've known this type of stuff is coming. And there was a great book by some guy called Paul Cunningham, who did a book on climate change back in 2008. And it was saying, get ready, storm surges. Yeah. This is coming down the line. And we didn't plan.
Micheál Martin didn't read your book.
Clearly. I'll send him a copy.
Like the Social Democrats manifesto, he didn't read it.
It's probably available at 25 cent.
You know? But again, in parts of the country, you know, where the water wasn't or isn't available, why weren't more water tanks dispersed? Why, for instance, were people who were going out looking for gas cylinders to be able to light the supercer they had been able to find, or, you know, light a gas hob? And, you know, within a radius of several villages for miles around, there weren't any available. So again, this was, you know, a week and a half later.
It seemed a huge community effort, you know, it's rolled into action, and that they were helping one another out without getting the help from the state that they so badly needed. And that's not a good look for a new government. And they didn't have plans in place. No. I spoke to a school principal who had been, you know, trying to get back online. He went out on air, was on drive time, hadn't heard from the Department of Education other than a pro forma email, even when he said he was shut. As soon as he was on air, he got calls from two TDs, hooked back up that evening and delighted to be. But he said, as a Desh 1 school, his problem was that when, you know, the doors were back open to pupils, some of them didn't come back. And he had to start that calling again, where he calls parents from disadvantaged communities and saying, are you coming back to school? We're open. And so these are the long-term issues that will persist when things like this happen.
One of the things that did slightly help the government, and it's a pure fluke, and it wasn't money that was distributed to GA clubs up and down the country for this reason. It was done for obviously far more politically obvious reasons, but all that money did pay off in the end, that you do have those facilities and they acted as community centres and saved the day in some places at least.
And of course, again, community resilience, you had communities come, you know, people once they got power back sharing their generators with, you know, others who hadn't yet. But at the same time, there have been a lot of calls which have been annoying a lot of environmentalists, Paul, saying, you know, Storm Éowyn and people being left the way they were proves that, you know, you need a chimney, you need a stove, you need gas. We need, you know, Michael McDougall writing this week about, even in terms of our own, the grid and the ESB itself, we need LNG reserves.
Yep. And those challenges are there. And just we're looking at the program for government, there's all sorts of commitments in relation to this, whether it's getting electricity from our seas, how they're going to develop it, how they're going to fund it. Cabinet on Tuesday was talking about the resilience of the grid. One of the reasons you have to put all the money into the grid is because people are now generating their own power, and it has to be so mobile, and so much of our electricity is generated by wind on windy days. So
and trees, a lot of rural TDs were raising the question about trees and tree felling and poles.
They're very keen to get cutting those trees.
Cabinet on Wednesday, now they were talking about that, and one of the things is setting back forests further away from the pylon so you can't have repeats. Michael Fitzmaurice was talking about this only earlier on today, the Independent Ireland TD, and he was saying it's pretty clear. The other thing he was saying, the amount of wood that's out there is incredible, and it's actually going to be difficult to harvest because in many cases the roots are up. So the machinery that's usually used won't work, so it's going to take time.
And Michael Healy-Ray yesterday in the chamber and his brother Danny talking about kind of plans or desire, that hope, especially Danny Healy-Ray has, that you would have no trees kind of close to a road at all. Just, it's going to be interesting to see how extensive this will be. Tánaiste to Simon Harris saying he's open to all proposals in this area. But given the lack of forestry cover across the country and the importance of it from a climate point of view, could you see a situation where those remaining very ecologically valuable pieces of forestry are now going to be cut? I think that's going to be a point of contention.
And the environments will also say is that part of the reason you got so much trees falling down is because it is a certain Sitka spruce rather than native forest. And if you had the native forest, it wouldn't be falling over.
And there are three houses derelict in the middle of Kilgarvan on the chimney point that you raised, because as Danny Healy-Ray pointed out last night, kind of curious thing where he was at the one end of the chamber, his brother on the government ranks.
That's what I wanted, because it's just been so odd this week, the image of Danny Healy-Ray. Normally he's down at the front, if you like, with the bowl boys, you know, getting their points in an independent fashion. Now he's up the back.
He's
on
up the
his
back.
Own.
When he started speaking, he said not to let on he was there at all because begrudgers didn't want him to be able to speak in the chamber. But he did speak at length. And one of the points he was raising is that to retrofit a home under certain schemes, you do have to take out the chimney. That's leading to a long time to actually repair those homes. And there are three derelict homes in the middle of Kilgarvan. Interestingly, the people sat in different places from the regional group who don't have any official speaking rights at the moment. Barry Heenahan kind of over in that zone that Finian McGrath used to occupy, Carl Nolan and Matty McGrath kind of further up the back benches.
Yes, it'll be interesting, and that's all still to play out.
Apparently the 26th of February is when proposals are expected on that particular one. To see what type of speaking rights that group get. Indications clearly that government backbenchers are going to get way more time as well as part of compromise.
Well, in fact, if anyone has a grievance about speaking time, it would have to be government backbenchers, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would seem so. And then you hear different things that there were certain debates along the way that had to finish early because government backbenchers didn't take up the time. But the valuable time and the precious time, they certainly are squeezed.
Yeah. And that's why Paul McAuliffe, the Fianna Fáil Dublin TD, was tweeting out the list saying, look, us backbenchers are getting squeezed on priority time. So that has been something that's a common and will definitely have to be formed part of the solution to the standing orders round.
Just before we leave the power thing, and I know government's talking this week about resilience measures and so on for the grid, and it won't be as bad again in future, but there's going to be a price to be paid for all of this. And the ESB already talking this week about it being passed on to customers.
We have to be ESB networks.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Yeah. Onto
he's pernickety today, isn't he? Young Cunningham.
We already pay the most for energy of any country in Europe. I mean, this is mad, Ted.
And it was picked up by Jerry Buttermer, the Minister of State, who asked the chief executive of ESB Networks to reflect on his comments. So it's quite clear that it isn't axiomatic that if Networks has a bill, it just automatically gets dumped onto.
I had to read that. Really is showing off.
Had to get dumped onto
tricks
the customer.
And flicks. What's interesting too, though, is that you've that other debate happening that you kind of see early signals that the government are trying to send out to wean the public off the energy credits. So if you've no more energy credits and you have a hike in your energy costs, that's going to make for an interesting winter.
Yes, and already opposition saying the state has to pay whatever it costs in terms of fixing the lines and, you know, higher costs for resilience in future. Ivana Bacik very clear this morning, the state should pay, not the consumer.
Yep.
We'll see how that one goes.
Okay. You want to be highfalutin. Let's talk about Irish-US relations then, Paul.
Wow, and then we come back to the grubby jobs, just to round off the talk. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that once again, and it seems to be happening every year, there's a question as to whether or not the Taoiseach, whoever he or she might be, as to whether or not they should go to the United States and hand over that bowl of shamrock to the sitting president. And it reared up its head again today with Labour leader, was yesterday, Labour leader Ivana Bacik suggesting that it's something we should consider not doing in the context of...
Sock Dem said it too.
Yeah, in the context of...
And Ruud Coppinger said it, absolutely. Yes, no consideration at
all. And in blunter words as well. So given that... some of what President Trump is planning on doing, whether it's, you know, taxes and tariffs and all that type of stuff, but more particularly in relation to the plan, if you want to call it that, for resettling the 2.3 million people live in Gaza, putting mm-hmm. them somewhere and then turning their destroyed homeland and building it into some sort of resort, and that this just isn't right and appropriate for the Irish Prime Minister, the Taoiseach, to be heading over there. I still think ultimately that Micheál Martin will go. And
it's a safe bet, Paul, though. It's
Will he be invited? Come. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's it. It hasn't been furnished yet, isn't that right?
No, it has not.
How many weeks are we out? 5 or so? You know, I mean, that'd be a turn up for the books if it just didn't come.
I think that it's more likely for him, for President Trump, that if he did want to let his displeasure be known, that you curtail the ceremonies and the number of people invited, rather than do the I don't want you to come, stay at home.
Yeah.
But even already, though, when he was talking about his planning difficulties and that, it was the EU he was blaming and not Ireland. Mm-hmm. So whatever's coming down the tracks, and it could well indeed be nasty, there doesn't seem to be a particular animosity there at the moment. After all, he did have dinner in Doonbeg that time with John Lee, the political correspondent, and Mark Daly. So I presume things are... Cathaoirleach Look at the Shannon at the time, I presume things are quite okay.
And do you think maybe that Mark Daly might become the Cathaoirleach Look at the Shannon again? I'm Fianna Fáil sources suggesting he's on course to secure it.
Yes.
The man who set up the well-known Oireachtas Senate Committee in relation to
European directives,
yes, which is a source of concern. Obviously, he's got great contacts in the United States, but that's the rumour today.
Yeah. And the Shannon election, of course, has been going on, and we'll get the Taoiseach's nominees, the Taoiseach's 11. Is that tomorrow?
Friday.
Final bit of the jigsaw. People like, from the Fianna Fáil point of view, Dee Ryan in Limerick, Alison Common in Louth, being mentioned from Fine Gael. They probably need someone in Donegal. Is that John McNulty? They also, Cork South West, Nola Donovan, could be in the mix there as well. So
they believe that's, you know, the Fine Gael are sore that this is two Dáils and they don't have TD from Cork South West. So I think they'd be inclined to do that. Other people be mentioned on the Fianna Fáil side would include Anne Rabbitt, former minister who wasn't successful in relation to the Shannon.
Joe Flaherty's an outside.
Lorraine Clifford Lee in Dublin as well, also being mentioned. So we would imagine that there would be a high number of women in Micheál Martin's six Shannon appointees, given what the party's been going through in relation to gender at cabinet and broader.
20 women and 29 men at the moment. I think Women for Election were pointing out that there's a historic opportunity to make it even. So they could. It is within the two men's gifts to have an even Shannon, should they choose 9 women, I believe.
It's remarkable the way the women are being pushed to the front of all the group photographs and the way they're sitting, you know, conveniently behind the Taoiseach. And
you don't think that's just chance on you?
No. And the colours as well, we were spotting actually. There was one very dapper Sock Dem TD Pádraig Roy today, as you spotted Micheál Lehane in a baby blue blazer. And that's another way of standing out. But as we've noticed with all those group shots of the women, we have beautifully dressed in jewel tones, the women, but they're like little glimpses of brightness amongst a sea of navy.
Coming back to US relations, even if the invite is there, the big thorn is, and even if you don't get near, you know, the trade and tariffs, the Occupied Territories Bill, and the accusation from the opposition is that government, again, is rowing back on what they said during the election
campaign. And Roderick O'Gorman, very clear, someone who would have known the thinking of that last government, that's exactly what's happening. He says it's a smokescreen, it's a tactic to do nothing. And I mean, even today, Ivana Bacik again pressing Simon Harris just for a timeline. There was no time. The only timeline is he's going to meet Francis Black. So you can kind of see that there is no great urgency behind this. It wasn't on those bills that were prioritised yesterday, put back on the order paper. Now, government say, well, it can't be because it's Francis Black's legislation. But of course, going into that election, it was everyone's legislation all of a sudden, wasn't it? Because it was politically expedient to do so.
But he also had gone through the legislation, and in the view of the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, it was going to require an awful lot of amending. So it wouldn't be possible to use that as a basis for legislation. Yeah, so you're going to have to go back to the beginning, back to second stage.
I think, though, if there's a moment of the week that tells you everything you need to know about the thinking and about the way things are moving, it's that exchange between Gary Gannon and Micheál Martin yesterday. where Gary Gannon says America are coming for us anyway. And they don't understand, Donald Trump doesn't understand weakness, just go ahead and do it. And Micheál Martin just looking at him kind of perplexed and with just a sense of incredulity. You'd like that one given your words today. And saying that the first duty of the state is to protect its citizens or people at a time of international turbulence.
And its economy.
And its economic model, yeah. And its values and its interests, he said. So that's where things are at. So for those reasons, he obviously will go to Washington if the invite comes, which it probably will. And the Occupied Territories Bill will move ever so slowly, if at all.
And we have had people like John DC, the former TD, former Washington envoy, saying and writing clearly about the fact that in his view, and there have been other voices in business about this, haven't there, that Ireland's position on the appalling scenes we've been witnessing in Gaza and Lebanon, that Ireland's position, you know, will cost jobs, will cost US investment. It comes at a price. So there's that, if you like, realpolitik view. Yeah. And then there's the other view that says, you know, this is a principle and we have to stand, but our words have to mean something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like you could even see it today, this week, it was noticeable that the first world leader to head over to Washington was the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and was backed to the hilt. And that was...
And kept coming away with a holiday resort in his back pocket,
indeed.
It seems. Yes.
And then this week, towards the end of it today, it's Thursday, we have the Israeli Defence Minister lumping Ireland in as one of the places where Palestinian people have a legal obligation to go to. Mm-hmm. And that is Minister Katz. And he previously was the foreign minister. And when he was foreign minister, Israel pulled its embassy out of Ireland. So we are now part of that sort of Israeli global view of being effectively an enemy state. And so we can expect to get peppered. But we know that Israel's got an awful lot of influence in Washington. And so that's the mire into which Micheál Martin is walking.
All right. Any other thoughts on the week gone by? It was a short week.
Yeah, it was a short week. I suppose the most striking thing was the fact that the Crown Court's ruling, which was so decisive, which did look to, you know, have an incendiary nature to it, how easily in the end the regional independents and Michael Lowry accepted that there was no way around that. The government too, the Crown Court had ruled.
But it's not beyond possibility that it could spark up again whenever these final draft rules, which are being drafted by Mary Butler, the Ciam Corla, at some point the committee has to vote.
Yeah, Michael Lowry seems to think he's on a promise as well from the government in that regard.
He still has a view. Well, this government has a majority, and a majority government can decide things.
Yeah. Yes, but the Ciam Corla has shown, though, just how strong, obviously enough, her role is in all of this. Mm. So it doesn't really fall to government.
It's actually a good day for her, because it did mean that she became as a Ciam Corla of all the Dáil. And when people might have been saying, well, that she came or in some way was ingratious to Michael Lowry for the job, as he was the one who first floated the idea, and she stood up, took a decision.
There was a lovely clarity as well. It wasn't there in the way that she quoted the words of the independents that they had said themselves in various interviews about support for the government.
And being part of the government.
Yes, and delivering as a result of that.
And I had emailed her later saying they were going to vote on a case-by-case basis, something that did anger those at the upper part of the government, that suddenly the independents that they had been talking to for so long were going to do this on a case-by-case basis. So they're not saying that anymore.
So all just settling down.
Just one final thing on the aesthetics of the chamber.
Oh, yes.
The Ciam Corla is sitting in a temporary chair at the moment. Oh. That's because the grand chair, for each new Ciam Corla, they get measured in the chair.
Oh, they adjust the legs,
and
do
it's
they?
Adjusted, yes. Those adjustments are underway. These things don't happen quickly.
And you wouldn't know them without Micheál Lahan, would you?
Exactly. Not sure you want to know them, but he's here to deliver those little pearls of wisdom.
The Harry Potter type chair. Hogwarts.
All right, we leave it there. Talk to you next week. Bye.